Why, hello, Jay.
How did you know it was me?
So if you're on the line, then I'm on the air, right?
Oh, my God, you're taking my catchphrase and everything. I have nothing to do now. Anthony well, Piccioni, how are you?
Well, I watched the other interviews, by the way, so that's how I remember. So
well, there you go.
How am I doing? I am doing very good at this moment. I'm writing other scripts, but I have a therapy session with myself, which we're going to talk about still in the back of my head.
So of course.
Ready of course. For any questions.
As well you should be. It's going open and run. That's a touchdown in the theater world like you never can imagine. That's absolutely wonderful. First off, congratulations, man. That's like, that's you know, people talk, oh, the show's a success, the show's a success. No, here is where you can scream, the show is a success. So this is terrific. let's start at the top. Tell us the journey of a therapy with myself. I know that it's had a couple of runs. It's had some great reviews. How did it get here? How did it get to the holy grail of things with an open-end run?
Sure. So I guess I'll take it back to the beginning. I started writing it when I was in college, the first draft when I was in college. Spent about a year writing that. Then I spent about a month after printing it out, putting it away in my closet, and then I did the edits on paper. Normally I write on my laptop, but I did the edits on paper and then converted them in my laptop. And after a ton of rewrites later, I presented a staged reading of it at the Dramatists Guild Foundation. That was October 2017.
Mm-hmm.
And about a year later, a little more than a year later, but I presented it at the New York Winterfest at the Hudson Guild.
Right.
Which maybe some people listening will remember. And that's how I got to meet a lot of people currently working on the show, with including my director, Holly Pinkstrange, who I first work with on my play An Energy Tale at the Midtown Theater Festival. And there's also a few others who have worked with me in other past shows too, and lots of new people. And yeah, as you said, the Hudson Guild production was pretty successful. We're pretty happy about that. But now we are going to the Crane Theater. Very professional staff there. We were just there a few days ago, actually. And they have an amazing lighting system. They have a projector that actually works. So,
they're one of the coolest spaces.
Someone from the Hudson Guild after saying that, but the projector that actually works, and yeah, I think it's going to be amazing. We're doing it on the third Saturday of every month, starting May 18th in the afternoon, and hopefully people come see it.
And you're booked all the way through to the end of 2020.
That's the plan, anyway.
You'll be around longer than Trump. There you go.
I was telling people the other day that hopefully, not to get political or anything, but hopefully we'll have a new president by the time we have our last one. That's how successful we'll be.
That's right.
But yeah, our plan is to go to 2020. Tickets are currently on sale for only the 2019 performances, but presuming our opening night goes well, which so far, knock on wood, I literally did that on my desk with my laptop.
I heard.
Presuming that goes well, we'll definitely go well into 2020, and there'll also be some new one acts I'll be planning to produce around that time too. So that'll be an interesting year for me. But so yeah,
so
very exciting stuff.
So you've had people that have been with it since the beginning. In many cases, Holly has been with it since Winterfest.
She worked on the therapy session production at Winterfest, but I met her while I was working on An Energy Tale at Midtown International Theater Festival during their last season.
I remember it well, and I remember her name on the list, sure.
I was going to say, you might remember it as the first time you ever represented me.
There you go.
And there are a few others. Our assistant director, Andreas, he is someone who acted in my play What I Left Behind at Winterfest in 2018, as did Emma, who is one of the actors in the show. I know two of our current leads in the show are people I've worked with before. Shane Zimmerman, he is someone who worked on my show Four Stages at Planet Connection Theater Festivity.
Mm-hmm.
And Nate Cousin, who was actually an ensemble member in our Hudson Guild production, but we promoted him to a lead recently.
Oh, that's great.
He actually went to, yeah, and he's really good. And he actually went to college with me at Eastern Connecticut State University, where I'm one of the few alums from that school who made it in New York, I'm proud to say.
That's terrific. I was going to say, how's the hometown feel about all of this?
Some people from Eastern actually saying that, but I'm
sorry. Oh, the heck with them. How's the hometown feel about your success? Anything in the newspapers out in the hometown, or how does the college feel about it?
Some of my professors have, my scriptwriting and playwriting professors have, two of them, Matt Gallagher and Edmund Chabot, have both been very proud and congratulatory of me. So
that's great.
Those are two names I want to shout out to, who are both great professors of mine when I was in school. So, you know, if they're listening to this, thank you very much for all your mentorship. I don't know if mentorship's a word, but
it is
anyway. Okay, there you go. So yeah, those are two examples. You know, my friends and family from back home, that sort of thing. I imagine if you talk to Nate, he would say the same thing. And yeah.
Now you have a lot of people that have gone on this journey with you. Are you a proponent of that? Are you a proponent? I've had colleagues who have said to me, well, I'm doing a new run, so I'm getting a new cast. Oh, well, I want to try something else. I had a cabaret colleague who always said, I want a different musical director for performance. Are you a proponent of getting that group that they can read your mind, they understand who you are, they know who you are, and so you just take them with you? Because it sounds like a lot of the people you're working with have been with you before. Are you a proponent of the repertory system?
Yes and no. So I do like working with people I've worked with before. If, you know, if I know that they're reliable, if I know they're very talented, obviously, why would I not work for them anymore? But at the same time, I do love working with new artists and stuff like that. I think the majority of the people in our cast are new actors. So, we actually have two new actors who weren't with us at the Hudson Guild who are coming in. One of whom I have never worked with before, and another only worked with me this past March during our fundraiser, Talking It Out.
So how did I
like a bit of both.
There's the big joke I always hear whenever someone gets cast, you know, somewhere in the middle of the run, they say, I can't imagine the part being played by anyone else. Bringing new people in when you have such a repertory thought, when you have people that you've worked with before, how does it, as an author, you've heard the play done one way. This is one of those cases because you had essentially, this is going to be run number three, not to mention any other kind of revisions that you've sat through. What goes through your head? You know, you've heard a line read a million different times by the same actor, and it's wonderful. This is how you hear it. And then an actor comes in and reads it a different way. Does it blow your mind? Or you go, oh, how brilliant, let's try that. Does it open things up, or is it just totally traumatic?
Well, we actually had, believe it or not, our first rehearsal for the new run yesterday.
Oh,
right now.
Okay.
By the time this airs, I might have a new response. But as of the time I'm talking to you, I'm still waiting to see. But it's interesting because during the stage reading, we actually did have an entirely new cast. And there were some great actors in there, too. But I don't know, because, like, you know, I know there are some writers out there who write roles for specific actors. I am not one of those people, even though I have actors who I love working with. So I guess maybe it's a bit easier for me because of that, but you know, it'll still be interesting. Like, I will say this, actually, during our rehearsal yesterday, now that I think about it, it is, Nate is playing that lead very differently from our actor at the Hudson Guild, and not in a bad way, but they're both very great actors in their own right, but you know, it is interesting to see the different choices they make and stuff.
Good.
You know what I mean?
So you're open-minded enough that someone comes in, they say, no, I want to try it this way. And you're going to, you're one of those to go, okay, lay it on me. Good for you. Good for you.
My philosophy is, as long as you stick to the core and essence of the story and the message and any meaning behind the words that I'm writing, that's what matters to me.
That's great. Oh, that's May everyone be like you. Now yours is even more of a hurdle on that level, if I segue from one question to another, because this is semi-autobiographical, yes?
Yes. 80 to 90% autobiographical. The only reason I say semi-autobiographical, by the way, is because I would just change the names, and a few of the characters are based on more than one person. So that's why semi-autobiographical.
Sure.
But yeah, a lot of that shit actually happened. So yeah.
Wow. So you're hearing new interpretations literally of your life up on that stage.
Yeah, there's it's been interesting to see, like, because there are some things that, you know, objectively speaking, are funny. Like, even when I look back on the real-life memories of it, I think are funny. But there are also some sad memories. Like, I don't want to spoil anything, but there's a certain scene toward the end of the play that was about someone who I was in a romantic relationship with and how things ended with that. And there was a bit of tragedy behind that. So, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be spoiled too much right there.
No, you've given us a great teaser with that. That's definitely something to whet our appetites.
I don't want to say moving on, but I'm definitely able to look at it a bit more objectively, or as objectively as I can now that I've seen it fully produced and seen it as an actual play in and of itself in its own right. When we were rehearsing for it at the Hudson Guild, I'm not going to lie, I was a bit of an emotional roller coaster I was trying to contain in my head. So,
I know I asked this to the last time when you were at Hudson Guild. Does it serve as any kind of catharsis when you watch a life right there up on the stage? Do you say, oh, look at that, I survived it, I did it, I'm here to tell the story? And does it supply you with like relief or contentment in some way?
It does. I mean, you know, I do think one of the things that keeps me going is the fact that I was there throughout my life, like, put it in vague terms. People can come see if they want to know the details.
Of course.
But, you know, I'm here now in New York City. I've been here about 2.5 years now, something like that. And so I've had 7 one-act plays. I've had a full-length play, which is now going from festival run to open-ended run.
Yep.
And I'm writing new works already. I just finished the other day a short screenplay I'd like to get filmed soon, so there's that. So I might be going into film, too, in addition to theater. And so, you know, there's a lot I have going on in my life that I'm very grateful for, needless to say.
2.5 years, that's all you've
like
been?
10 to 20 years. Maybe I'll write a sequel that's about my crazy adventures in New York. So, who knows? We'll see.
You know, now I'm gobsmacked. That's it, just 2.5 years, and look at where you've come. That's really marvelous.
I know.
That's really marvelous. You have great drive, and that's Woody Allen always says. You know, the main proponent of success is simply showing up, and you're always there. So
it's true.
So that's
true. There,
absolutely marvelous.
It's very true. There's so many writers I knew, just in general, I'll say, who I'm very good in some cases, but, you know, whenever people say you should submit this, you should submit that, you should try and stage it yourself, they don't even try. You know, I'm a big proponent that if you don't try, at least, there's no guarantee you'll succeed.
Oh, no, of course not.
The only guarantee of failure is if you don't try.
Right. So. You may win if you try, but you will definitely lose if you don't. Good for you.
Exactly.
Good for you. Now yours has an interesting hurdle to it. It's not an open end run in the sense, you know, you're 8 shows a week or something. You're a monthly. We're going to see you every month at the Crane. What's the hurdles involved in that? Because essentially you're telling your cast, okay, be ready once a month for the next year and a half. What's the hurdles? What's the obstacles you're encountering with such a run?
Well, there are multiple pros and cons. I'll start with the pros. First of all, it's on a Saturday afternoon, which is a pretty popular time for people who either live in New York and maybe have off from work, or maybe friends and family of the cast who want to come into New York, and it's a good time for them to come in. And also for our actors, it gives them time, and it gives our creative team members time also to, like, work around that, do, like, other stuff in addition. So there's that. And, you know, I know it's a very unconventional schedule, so that's kind of, I don't know if it's a con, but it definitely makes our show stand out.
You're more of an event.
But
that's
definitely.
When I hear this, I think to myself, you're more of an event than anything else. It's like every month there is this event that you are handing the audience. So I think that's really cool.
Exactly. There's Holly, actually, in addition to directing this show, she has directed murder mystery type thing. I don't know if it's a murder mystery. I'm sorry to the creators out there if I'm being wrong, but it's like, it's called Fireside Mystery Theater, and it's like a mystery type radio theater thing that they do every month, and they've been going on for like 7 years, and they seem to be doing well financially. So, you know, if you could do like a variety show like that every month and be successful, why can't you do a straight up show, like a play like that, and not be successful? So maybe I'll be proven wrong and we'll be a total flop, but I'm hopeful we won't. So.
I'm going to doubt that, because I'm glad you mentioned about the murder mysteries, because those are that's a phenomenon that's been around for a long time, since Tony and Tina's wedding. It's that kind of, that's why I say it's an event. People look forward to it. You're sort of handing them something to look forward to. You're right. Vacationers and tourists and whatever, they can plot their time to add that to their agenda when they're in town. So you're actually, you're
Although
picking up
say,
a profitable thing that no one seems to be grabbing at this moment. So
although
it's very clever.
Say, if you're looking for a murder mystery, don't come to my place. I'll probably never write a straight up murder mystery.
There you go. Well, everyone lives, so that's that.
I might change my mind like tomorrow, but we'll see.
Now, speaking of tomorrow, I read an email. You're writing a musical.
Yes, I'm co-writing it, I should say, with Andreas Gallardo Basilo.
Mm-hmm.
And he is, who's our assistant director, of course, for Therapy Sessions. Because he's a songwriter in addition to that. So he's working on the music. I'm doing the lyrics. And it deals with issues of drug addiction and stuff like that.
Oh,
so
wow.
I don't want to go into too many more details, but we're hoping to present it at a festival sometime next year. So
that's terrific.
You'll be among the first to know, Jay.
Thank you. I was drawing the breath to say that. You have a mission. You, when you said about the topic for the musical, I said, okay, yeah, this is, you have a real mission. A lot of playwrights are very diverse in how they write. And while you're diverse in your location and characters and things, you have a mission, of talking about, battling addictions and illnesses and just surviving life. What's, in your words, what's your mission? What's your mission as a playwright?
My mission as a playwright is, I mean, the truth is, I know a lot of my works have focused recently on mental health and all that. I've heard someone refer to it as diseases of despair. That's a pretty good word.
Oh my gosh.
I think it was actually Bernie Sanders who referred to it as that on the town hall he did earlier this week. So I thought that was a good term to refer to it as that, because it is kind of a disease of despair, whether you're suicidal, whether you're anxious, whether you're addicted to drugs. And, you know, it's very sad, because I've said before, like, the suicide rates, for example, have been going up all the way since the beginning of the century, since 9/11. And, you know, I've always thought it was just me. It was just a few emo teenagers in the late 2000s who were like that. But, no, it's something that affects all generations. It happens for a wide variety of reasons. So I'm definitely interested in exploring mental health and mental illness and trying to raise as much awareness as I can for the root causes and the realities of what it's like to live with them. And so I guess that's my mission with these types of shows. Although the full length play I'm writing right now, I will note, is very, very different. It's more of a political sci-fi sort thing.
Oh my.
So, exactly. So I probably said too much about that as is, because I'm still writing it and it'll be a while before you guys see that. But that's my next full length play after Therapy Session.
Wow.
So,
well, that's going back to where I met you at first, because you wrote a conservation play. You wrote a a play about the Earth, the Energy Tale, and it was sort of like traveling into the future, if I remember correctly. So you're going back to another route here, your science fiction route.
Yeah, it's one of them. I mean, you know, I've always loved sci-fi when I was younger and still do today. I was watching an interview with George Lucas a few months ago, and he was talking about how his early inspiration for Star Wars was actually the Vietnam War, and he was sort of doing like a subversive way through sci-fi of these rebels who are fighting against this evil empire, except the empire in real life was the American Empire trying to invade Vietnam, and how in recent years it continued with like Iraq. So like, you know, there might be some conservative people listening to this who might think that's controversial, but like if you're on the left or you're on the right, I think a lot of people I know love Star Wars, for example. So I'm definitely interested in how science fiction can be used to spread certain messages and certain ideas. So I'm definitely exploring that too. I've explored it a bit with Energy Kale. I'm exploring it even more with some of the new stuff I'm writing too.
Wow. So. That would keep me on the phone for about an hour and a half, because that's my mission. I believe.
Hey,
you
I
know,
got all day. So
yeah, thank you.
I know you probably is tough to do, but
that's always been my mission, because I fervently believe, as much as they think horror movies and sci-fi and everything are cheesy or funny or whatever, no, they're the deepest of parables. They're the darkest parts of our mind trying to rationalize what's all around us. And to hear that Star Wars was just a parable of the Vietnam War makes total sense to me, and it's going to blow my mind. That's great.
Yeah.
Oh. Anthony, thank you so much for speaking with me today. I am thrilled. You're the first guest that's made a second appearance on the Passion Pit, so congratulations. Well, Open End Run.
Made Passion Pit history.
There you go. Well, you're making history. An Open End Run of your off-Broadway show that almost single-handedly you've brought it there, and you are an inspiration to so many. Thank you so much. Here's to sold-out crowds in the Crane Theater, which is an historic theater, too, so you picked a great location for it
definitely,
as well.
Definitely.
And may the resounding reviews keep it running far longer than at least two presidents.
Definitely.
Thanks, pal. I'll talk to you soon.
Right.
Ciao.
Bye.